Welcome to our first day of the seminar on 24 Gurus. I'm very happy to be in this forest of Vrindavan here. It's wonderful. It's very inspiring to sit with so many beautiful Tulsi plants and to speak. The purpose of our seminar is to try to see how the things of this world are our gurus and not our objects of sense gratification. By changing our vision in this way, we can become free from obstacles and arthas, and we can attach our mind to Krishna. So we will also try to practically apply this knowledge to our everyday life. I will give you a little homework, not written down, but just to see the world in a different way. Try to apply the lesson of one of the gurus that you hear about today. We're going to have five gurus today. And I will introduce you to these gurus in a few minutes. Who will your gurus be today? The first one will be Mother Earth. It was Mother's Day in America. I don't know if you have that here in Finland.
It's international.
It's international, yeah. We have seven mothers. And one of our seven mothers is the Earth. Who are our seven mothers? I don't have them listed here. Okay, anyway. The wife of the Brahmana, the wife of the Guru, the cow, the king's wife also. They are all our mothers. Supposed to treat us like their children. And they are, and our original mother, our biological mother, is also our mother. And the nurse, yeah. So now we don't have nurses, but in the previous ages, mothers used to have help with their children. And the nurse, there would be a nanny, they call them. They would be nannies. In India still, there was one. There's one family in Mayapur, and the nanny has come with the daughter at her marriage, and because she has no family, and she also took initiation and became a devotee, as well as the devotees. So we will hear from Uddhava Gita. How many of you have read Uddhava Gita? Nobody yet. Oh, good. First time. You all hear Bhagavad Gita. But Uddhava Gita is even more advanced than Bhagavad Gita. It's very similar to Bhagavad Gita. Many chapters and verses are very similar, opulences of Krishna. But the first three chapters of Uddhava Gita are explaining 24 gurus. And Lord Krishna is speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. And he's quoting a Brahmana Avaduta who instructed King Yadu many millions of years ago. So he's quoting from this Brahmana Avaduta how he received instructions from 24 different gurus as he was traveling throughout the world. Why is Lord Krishna presenting these teachings to Uddhava? Because Uddhava said to Krishna at the end of his lila, he said, I know you're preparing to leave this world, and so please take me with you. And in response, Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita, beginning with the 24 gurus, because Uddhava was the only one, practically, who was going to be left on this planet after Krishna left. He took his whole family with him, and all the queens left, everybody left, except Bajranab, his grandson, or great-grandson, and Uddhava. Uddhava was sent on a mission to Bharatakasham to give some enlightenment to the sages up there. So the first three chapters, this is in Canto 11, chapters 7, 8, and 9. In these three chapters of the 24 gurus are described. And there will be actually two more. Somehow, it says 24, but there's 26. So don't be surprised if there are a few extra. I think it's 25, because the last one is the body. The body is also our guru. Just like when I went to the Ayurvedic doctor. So would you like to come up here in the front, on this side? Yes. Yes. What is your name?
My name is Avaduti.
Avaduti, of course, yes. Yes. Sorry, this will be for you. This is the Avaduta Brahmana speaking. Lord Krishna is quoting the Avaduta Brahmana. And we have also our Avaduta here. So that is very nice. And where is Nityananda? I didn't, so I don't see him.
He had to go back to fetch something from the ashram. He's coming by metro.
He's coming by metro. Okay, good. We will be happy to see him. Would you like a chair? There's a chair here in the back. I think, you sat on a chair last time, I think. I don't remember, but... there's this devotee. No, not you. Yeah, you can come here. The very auspicious place between the Tulsi trees.
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, I hope I think we might have to share.
There's 20.
20. Oh, it should be enough. Okay, you don't need a chair. Oh, very good. There was somebody else I saw in the chair. Okay. Well, yeah.
I wish to have memory like that.
And this is Vrindavan. Yes, Vrindavan was in Vrindavan. I remember he came. I think, no?
Who?
Vrindavan Chandra?
No, that's not.
That's not Vrindavan. Oh, okay.
He's coming, but
okay, all right. So we are going to begin the what I already said was about, this is Uddhava Gita. The purpose is to try to see how the things of this world are our gurus and not the objects of our sense gratification. Did you get a copy for yourself?
Yes, Mother.
You have? Okay.
You want to write a vijaya.
Yeah, there's some extras here. There's some extras. Okay, so keep them by the door for the latecomers. We will examine each of these 24 gurus, and here's a nice chart. On this chart, you see the guru on your left side here, and in the next will be the verse number from 11th canto, the reference. Then the theme, or what the lesson we learned from the guru, will be in the next column. And then there's a references from Bhagavad Gita. So basically, we'll discuss at least five gurus every day, and sometimes six. So we will ask ourselves some questions. What lesson do we learn from this guru? And this will help you. There are actually some extra lessons that I forgot to put on here, so you might have to write them down for tomorrow's class, actually. And how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Because in order to understand the qualities, you have to see some examples. So Prabhupada showed the example of all these qualities in his life. So we will be hearing stories about Prabhupada that show these qualities. This is Finnish, Russian, okay? Very good.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
It's okay.
No, it's fine. And their homework will be how to apply this lesson to your life. So each day I will give you these five gurus and ask you to choose one of these gurus and try to apply the lesson tomorrow to your life before the next class comes. So, now in Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna says to Uddhava, five results will happen if you hear this knowledge. So what can you expect to happen? Now, it may not happen immediately, but it may take some time. First of all, you will get self-realization and you will be satisfied. Second, you'll become dear to all living beings because you will see Krishna in all living beings. Third, you will never be hampered by any disturbances in life. All obstacles will be removed, in case you have any. And number four, you will act spontaneously according to religious principles and avoid sinful activities. So you will be on the Raganuga level, that automatically you will do the right thing. And fifth, you will never again fall down into the cycle of birth and death. So these are the benedictions Lord Krishna gives by hearing this Uddhava Gita. And this is the beginning of Uddhava Gita. Now, what we have to do now is to use our intelligence. This is going to be a very intellectual discussion here. How we can use our intelligence in Bhakti Yoga. In one of the purports of this chapter 7, it is said, one can strengthen the teachings received from one's guru and avoid transgressing his orders by observing ordinary things in nature. One should not mechanically receive the teachings of one's guru. The disciple should be thoughtful and with his own intelligence realize in practice what he has heard from his spiritual master by observing the world around him. So today we are going to learn from five gurus: earth, mountain, tree, air, and sky. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we will hear from water, fire, moon, sun, and pigeon. Thursday, we will hear from python, ocean, moth, honeybee, and elephant. And Friday and Saturday, we're having two classes together. So honey thief, deer, fish, pingala, child, young girl, arrow maker, serpent, spider, wasp. And lastly, our own material body, which is not on here. So the first guru for today is earth. Before I discuss the earth, the qualities of the earth, when you think of the earth, what comes to your mind when you think of the earth? Just earth, ground, or earth planet, or ground, or what comes? Yes?
Tolerance.
Tolerance, yes?
Mother,
very good. Yes.
Depending,
yes. We depend on the earth for everything. Yeah, so the mother, as he said, mother nurtures the child. She gives everything without even thinking of her own benefit. So the earth gives us a place to stay and food to eat, what else the mother gives us, shelter. Anything else when you think of the earth? Yes.
Medicine.
Oh, very good. Nobody ever said that one. That's a really good, thoughtful answer. Medicine. Security. So the earth is very tolerant. Now the verse in Canto 7, verse 11, this is the verse. And it doesn't mention the earth directly, but it's about the earth. A sober person, even when harassed by other living entities, should understand that his aggressors are acting helplessly under the control of God, and thus he should never be distracted from progress on his own path. So the earth is very tolerant. So many things are happening. Fracking, this fracking is, they take the gas out from, that's very good, you don't know. Most of the countries, they know, they take the gas out from the earth. Even New Vrindavan, I think they're doing this now in the hills. Australia, New Zealand, they are doing this fracking. Even New York, I think they want to do it. So deep oil drilling, atomic explosions, pollution. And despite this, the earth continues to provide all necessities of the living beings. So the earth gives us the lesson of tolerance. And in our life, sometimes we see that people, they're against us and they do things which we don't appreciate. But from the earth we learn that these aggressors are acting helplessly and they just are instruments of our own karma. So we should not see them as enemies. What we need to tolerate is Krishna's first instruction in Bhagavad Gita, tamstitikshasabharata, that you must, I know it's very difficult, but you must tolerate. Now one thing I must say, I was giving this seminar in Christchurch, New Zealand. Oh, is that Vrindavan?
Yeah.
Okay, I got confused. I thought this one, they looked at...
He is Bhakta Kayas.
Bhakta Kayas, okay. All right, that's Vrindavan. Yeah, I did get confused there. They look very similar. Brothers, they could be. They are brothers.
Yeah, they are, in a way.
Yes. Okay. So how did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? He tolerated us. Oh, and before that, I'll tell you about New Zealand. Because everyone depends on the security of the earth, but there they had an earthquake. And within 45 seconds, the whole business district fell down, completely destroyed. So when I was there the year before last, there was a slight tremor. 3.5 as opposed to 6.5 is what they had. But for me, it was, it was first time, so it was kind of scary that all of a sudden just a very huge sound and you're shaken so much. And then this year, it was even bigger. It was I was in the family's house, and four children were there, and I heard this rumbling, and I thought it was the children running upstairs. But then when the house started shaking back and forth, I realized it was not the children. it was an earthquake. So, and in that experience, you feel completely disoriented, and you cannot. So I appreciated how the earth, although being shaken temporarily, quickly returned to its stable nature. So there was like a little shaking. So I was just appreciating, well, the earth can take so many things, and now it is stable again. So let us pray we can return to our Krishna conscious nature, although we sometimes temporarily shaken in this material world. So Prabhupada, he tolerated us, especially. We came with all our material desires and lack of culture to this movement, and he had no supporters for 1 year, but still he accepted us with all our faults, and he's still accepting everybody. He's accepting everybody as his students. One time in Delhi, one man, he was supposed to receive Srila Prabhupada's mail, and he was opening it up and taking out the donations and then just giving him without the donations. So they discovered this. And one devotee asked, well, Prabhupada, if he is not dealt with, will he have to suffer for the offense at the feet of a pure devotee? And Prabhupada said, there is only one thing to do. And then the devotee said, oh, have him arrested. Prabhupada said, no, forgive him. So this forgiveness is a part of tolerance. It's very, very important. Even these modern alternative doctors, they know that if you have resentment in your heart, it will cause you to get sick. In fact, anger, all of these subtle things, they will cause disease now. And I saw this, that in one place I was preaching, one devotee had cancer, and she had a lot of resentment towards somebody, so then she kept getting cancer. And that was what they said in this book, that cancer is caused by resentment. So therefore we should tolerate. Now I want to do a little meditation here by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his purport on the earth. So everybody can sit comfortably and listen to this meditation and try to follow it. The earth, which is always visible to me, is the expansion of the lotus feet of my Lord, who is always to be meditated upon. All moving and non-moving living beings have taken shelter of the earth and are thus sheltered at the lotus feet of my Lord. For this reason, I should respect every living being and not envy anyone. In fact, all living entities constitute the coast of a gem on my Lord's chest. Therefore, I should never envy or deride any living entity. So this is the meditation of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Next time you see the earth, you think of the lotus feet of the Lord. And when you think of the earth, the lotus feet, all living beings are taking shelter. And then, after you think of those, understand not to be envious of anyone, because they're all connected to Krishna. Everybody's connected. And we can understand this by meditating on the earth. So the lesson is tolerance. How can we apply this lesson to our life in Krishna consciousness, in relationship to Krishna tomorrow? What can you do to apply this lesson of the earth? Any ideas? Practical. We want to make this a practical application class and not simply theoretical. And does anybody have anything to tolerate? Yeah?
I was thinking if you go to Sankirtan
and
somebody doesn't want to take the book, you shouldn't be envious of him and ruin his day, but instead be very nice to him.
Okay, so when you're in book distribution, you definitely have to tolerate people who do not take the books. Okay. Anybody else have some idea how to apply it to your life? Lesson of the earth. Yes?
Just thinking about my situation. I work as a teacher, and one of my duties is not to tolerate. I have to correct. So it's
right.
I have to repeat again and again to some child that you have to do like this. So it's kind of like patience.
Okay, patience, good.
Like, okay, this person is not able to do this yet, but okay, you do again and again.
Yeah, so that's very similar to tolerance. It's in the Trinadapi Sunichina, Torarapi Sunichina. It's all there. Good. Patience. It's another sister of or brother of tolerance. But you have to have patience. And you have to tolerate saying it over and over again. It's the same thing. Anybody else have some idea? Yes.
I didn't understand this
Kaustubha. Oh, Kaustubha, yeah. Yeah, so if you see a picture of Vishnu or Krishna, there is a jewel on his chest. It's called Kaustubha. And it's described that this jewel is made up of all the living beings. They're all on the chest of the Lord. All living beings are in this gem. So in that way, all living beings are related to Krishna as well, because he's wearing them on his chest. And another way is from the lotus feet. Because the earth, by seeing the earth, you remember the lotus feet. Okay, so tomorrow you can choose the earth, and the next guru, the mountain and the tree, you have a very similar lesson. Do we have any more copies left? You can give one to Muni Raj.
I have it in the computer.
Okay. Okay, so here's a copy for... Pass it down. Oh, she has copies. You have copies. Okay, it's all right. It's all right. She has copies. Okay. So, now the mountain. From the mountain, we will learn selfless service to others. The mountain and the tree. A saintly person should learn from the mountain to devote all his efforts to the service of others and to make the welfare of others the sole reason for his existence. Similarly, as disciple of the tree, he should learn to dedicate himself to others. So, when you think of the mountain, what thought comes to your mind?
Water.
Water?
I'm just stressing.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Age.
Okay, age. Yes?
Greatness.
Hmm?
Greatness.
Greatness. Okay, the mountain is great. Yes.
Forbearance.
Forbearance. Very good. Yes, yes. And this is one of our examples of Dhruva Maharaj is compared to a mountain. Because when he was fighting with the yakshas, then arrows were raining on him and you couldn't even see him or his chariot. In the same way, the rain and thunder falls on the mountain. So what is the effect of the rain and thunder on the mountain? It cleans it up, cleanses it. It removes all the impurities. So a devotee, when he engages in devotional service, all the impurities are removed by the distresses that come. The trouble, the obstacles, they will remove all distress. They will clean his incompetencies. So yes, the mountain is forbearing. And the mountain gives everything. Selfless service, the Govardhan Hill. We have Giriraj with us today. So let us glorify him. Giriraj supplies Krishna and Balaram with their calves, cows and cowherd friends with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant. So, I want to give you an example of Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan. This is Sachinandan Swami has written how... we are talking about gurus today, and this is taking place in Govardhan Hill, this what he has said. And one of his gurus was a crack in the wall. So let us hear how a crack in the wall can be your guru. Now, you can be creative. You don't have to limit yourself to the five gurus. I'm giving you homework for those of you who came late, that choose one of these gurus and try to apply the lesson to your life tomorrow. Now, here's another one. You can look for gurus also in your life that happens. And that's the purpose of the seminar, to see the things of this world as your shiksha gurus and not as objects of sense gratification. So here is Satchinandan Swami's writing. For a few days, I'm staying at the Radhavasundara complex to rest and recover my lost health. It is a tourist resort. This is at Govardhan. For middle-class Indians, with many nicely landscaped gardens and lawns, regular electricity, which one has to pay by the day, air conditioning, satellite TV in all rooms, of golf course, there's Radha Golf, and other modern facilities. Golf cart zoom around, energized by humming batteries. It is an artificial world within the original and simple rural Vrindavan atmosphere, almost like a small Disney World without Mickey Mouse. Strange. One feels captured within a golden cage, locked away from the free ecstatic world of Raj. Today I went on a japa walk within the complex. My steps were shaky as I walked along the high walls. Suddenly a shaft of light hit me. It fell through a crack in the thick brick wall. I looked through the opening into the majestic original landscape of Raj, its trees, fields, cows, and waves of sweetness. I felt like a prisoner longingly looking into freedom through the prison bars. How much I yearned to be a resident of that land of love. But in the afternoon, when I met the old gardener of the complex, my reserve feelings changed. So here's a picture of the wall in Govardhan, where he was. You can see outside the peacocks and the flowers. The old man was in great bliss as he lovingly supplied water to a champak tree. What is his secret, I wondered. His answer came unexpectedly. We are directly in the laps of Giriraj, the best of Hari's servants, he explained. Giriraj is here, Giriraj is there, Giriraj is everywhere. He used to be a huge mountain, but he sank into the earth. Beneath your house is his underground extension, his hidden lap. Then raising his arms, the old gardener shouted, Giriraj, Maharaj, Aki, Jai. Here's the old gardener from Braj. And it's true, the devotees, they have the temple there at Govardhan. So they tried to dig for water in the front of their land. The digging only went like down 20, 30 feet. Or what, meters. And then in the back of the land, it went down much deeper, 100 meters. So you can see how it was like the Govardhan is underneath everything. His words were powerful and spoken from realization. He brought me back to a higher understanding. Krishna is everywhere, especially in Vrindavan. I felt the wall of my conceptions opening. Another wall cracked up. How could I forget? There is nothing other than Radha and Krishna in every atom of this world. When we develop this understanding, there will be nothing to lament. We will go beyond the good and bad, happiness and sorrow. We will remain unaffected like lotus leaves that may touch water, but never get wet. So here's an example of, here's again the Govardhan landscape. So the mountain, we learn from the mountain selfless service. How did Srila Prabhupada exemplify this quality? That he was obviously always selflessly serving the devotees. In the beginning, he was cooking, washing the dishes, cleaning up after everyone, until finally some of the devotees got the idea we should help him. You know, hippies, it took a long time because their concept was, I won't work. That was their philosophy. But then, eventually, they did start helping Srila Prabhupada. Now, I will, before we go to the question of how to apply it, I want to talk about the tree. The tree is very similar to the mountain. It gives self a service, also tolerance, like the tolerant like a tree, as we say in Shikshastika. But there is one difference from the tree from the mountain. Who can say the difference? If you just think of it logically. Yes?
The tree provides fruits.
Fruits. Yes.
Shelter.
Mountain also gives shelter.
Yeah.
Yes?
Just thinking that the tree is kind of a living conscious entity.
No, the mountain is too, according to Prabhupada. Yeah? There's another difference. Yes?
Well, at least the tree can be like easily hurt, but...
The tree can be?
Yeah, like easily hurt.
Easily
like
hurt.
Long, but the mountain is like a really...
Mountain
like
is not hurt. Okay, well, you didn't get the answer yet, so I'll tell you. You can move the tree, transplant it, whereas the mountain does not move. So this is another thing the tree has to tolerate, that you can pull it up or even cut off a branch and then plant it again. You can move the tree. And so this is the particular nature of the tree not seen in the mountain, is that it's movable. You can transplant it. It's Prabhupada... Prabhupada Lamrita planting the seed and then the tree transplanting. Prabhupada transplanted Tulsi trees, he transplanted deities, so many things he transplanted into the West from India, and himself too. He transplanted himself. So he's more like the tree. Now, there's a very interesting thing you probably don't know about trees, which I will tell you about, and it's very relevant here in Finland because it gets cold here in the winter. But I don't know if this will work here. But anyway, in London, Bhaktivedanta Manor, in the winter, Srila Prabhupada was on a walk, and the lake there was frozen, and the ducks were just on, you know, walking very frustrated on top of the ice. They couldn't swim. But there was one small portion of the lake which was not frozen. And that part was where the trees were over the water. And Srila Prabhupada says that the tree gives warmth in winter and shade in summer. So, and he said that's why the six Goswamis lived under trees in the winter. They were getting warm. They were getting warm. So it gives warmth. The trees give warmth in the winter. Interesting concept. So if you're feeling cold out there, you just go, but your trees are not the same. They're kind of skinny and tall. I don't know how much, and they lose their leaves too. In Vrindavan, they don't lose their leaves so much. Yeah, so I don't know how beneficial these trees will be.
There's some willow trees.
Oh, are there?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. You have to find a willow tree then if you want to. Okay, good, good. Because all I see are these other skinny ones that are like sticks and evergreen.
Pine trees and like
pine.
That. You know, if you get lost in the forest in the winter, then you go under the pine tree. And
really?
Yeah, you can survive.
So it's the same thing. It is true.
Yeah.
They give shelter in winter also. And the evergreen is blooming all winter,
yeah.
Those evergreen trees. Yeah, so it is true here. So good. So Krishna, he also appreciated the trees, and he spoke one very wonderful verse. Before that verse, he said, even look at these greatly fortunate trees whose lives are completely dedicated to the benefit of others. Even while tolerating the wind, rain, heat, and snow, they protect us from these elements. So that's how selfless is the tree, that he's taking all of the rain and the snow and then giving shelter to others to protect them from that. So how selfless that is. So Prabhupada was like that. He was taking all of the karma, our karma, and protecting us from it. And he was sometimes even suffering, he said, from our karma. Now, a wonderful verse, 10:22:33, Krishna says, just see how these trees are maintaining every living entity. Their birth is successful. Their behavior is like that of great personalities. For anyone who asks anything from a tree never goes away disappointed. So then, etava jamasafa yam dehinam iha dehishu pranarata dihavacha shaya acharanam sadar. And this is the one which applies to everyone. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. So pranayar, you should give your life. And all of us are giving our lives for Krishna. If you cannot give your life, Pranartha, give some money. That's for the life members, for the Indians who come to the temple. Pranartha tiya. If you have no money, give your intelligence, how to spread Krishna consciousness. If you have no intelligence, then vacha, give your words. Speak something. Just say, chant Hare Krishna. Go and tell people. Chant Hare Krishna. So one of these four you have, either life, or money, or intelligence, or words. So if you give your life, that includes everything. But then there are, you know, other levels which you can actually give. So we learn from this guru tolerance and service from the mountain. So how can we apply this concept of service of the mountain tomorrow to our lives? Any ideas? One of these gurus you can choose, earth, mountain, or tree, and try to apply this lesson to your life tomorrow. Any ideas how to do this service? Yes?
I was thinking, like, many times there's something note that, oh, this should be something done about.
Oh, right.
We don't do it because someone else should do it.
Right.
So we can do it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did you hear what he said? Sometimes we notice, oh, here's something that needs to be done. And we think, oh, yes, yeah, somebody will do it. But it's good if we do it. If we do it, that is very good. Then we will be sure it gets done. Good. Any other ideas about that as service?
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can try to make someone's day.
We can make someone's day. Yeah, in the early days, it was amazing. You come to the temple. I would visit the temple in the morning. And they said, okay, now it's time for aarti. You have to stay for aarti. Then after aarti, no, now it's time for prasadam. You can't go now. And then after prasadam, oh, now it's harinam. You have to come on harinam with us. After harinam, oh, no, now you can't go yet. It's just like, I was there the whole day, you know, every day was like that, every time I would visit. Oh, you know how to type. Okay, you type. Prabhupada's lectures. So that's how it was in the old days, that you could not leave the temple. They would not let you leave because there was always something to do. Some service. They will not let you go. So, any ideas? This is good. Good creative thinking here. Creative thinking. Anyway, you'll get a whole 24 hours to think more about how to do it. Yeah. So how did Srila Prabhupada exemplify his quality? He was flying from Mauritius to Durban, Africa. And before, like, I think 20 years ago, there were non-smoking sections and smoking sections of the airplane. Now it's all non-smoking. It's great. But before, you could smoke in the airplane, and there was, like, in the back of the plane, like the last 8-10 rows, it was for smoking. So one time Prabhupada was in the non-smoking section, and all these other people from a rugby team, they're all smoking in the non-smoking section. So the airline hostess asked them, can you please not smoke? And then Pushta Krishna, they kept on. And they were drinking and smoking, you know, because they probably won the game or something. And so Pushta Krishna was about to ask the stewardess again. But Prabhupada said, what is the difference between us and them if we cannot tolerate these sorts of things? Don't be an ordinary, common, foolish man. So imagine how much Srila Prabhupada was tolerating. I know, that happened to me one time. And they put me in the smoking section. And there was one man right next to me who was smoking. I just started crying. And then the stewardess made all my row and a few back non-smoking. It was nice of her. And the man said, I won't smoke in the flight. So it was quite... Anyway, I couldn't tolerate it at all. I was just like, oh my God. Because I get asthma. And it would be bad for me. So here's another one. One day, a senior godbrother, this is Bhakti Charu Maharaj speaking, he was annoyed with me and was chastising me heavily. And I was quite sensitive, and I was feeling bad that he chastised me. And I went to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, the sign of one's spiritual advancement is not the big position one has. The real sign of advancement is how humble and how tolerant one has become. So this is also what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, that the more the measure of your advancement, spiritual life, is your humility, how humble you have become. And that's the measure of how we're going to go into the back to Godhead, because we have this, our soul is, you know, we can't even see it, so small. But our body is big, and so we think, I'm this big. And then our false ego is much bigger, and we think, oh yes, I'm the controller of this much. So the false ego won't fit in the spiritual world. It will not be able to go in the door of the spiritual world. You have to leave it here, behind. It has to go. Real ego can go, and that's humility. That's humility. So the service attitude is so wonderful, it can deliver even the impersonalists from their conception if they meditate on the universal form, according to second canto, first chapter. So we had some ideas about how to apply this. Now the next guru is the air. Air is two types of air, inside air and outside air. Inside air is called prana. So we will learn a lesson from prana, and we will learn a lesson from the wind, which is outside air, the wind blowing outside. So what do we learn, first of all, from prana? We will learn simple living and high thinking. And I think now is your chance to practice this, because you have no temple. Very simple. So simple living and high thinking. You have to really see Krishna in your environment where you are, because in the temple it's much easier to see, to be there with all the devotees. And now we have to see it everywhere. You come here and you see Krishna and Vrindavan. 10 kinds of air according to Bhagavad Gita purport. Pranavayu. So pranavayu includes 5 airs. These senses interact with sense objects, like the ear for hearing, eyes for seeing, nose for smelling, tongue for tasting, hand for touching. So these are the 5 pranavayus. And there's apanavayu, which goes downwards. And there's vyanavayu, shrinks and expands. Samanavayu, adjust equilibrium, so you're not dizzy. Udana vayu goes upwards, so there only seems to be 9. And Prabhupada summarizes, when one is enlightened, one engages all these in searching for self-realization. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, and everything. And searching for self-realization. Now, the verse says, a learned sage should take his satisfaction in the simple maintenance of his existence and should not seek satisfaction through gratifying the material senses. In other words, one should care for the material body in such a way that one's higher knowledge is not destroyed, and so that one's speech and mind are not deviated from self-realization. So, simple living, regulation. One must properly maintain one's body by regulated activities of eating, sleeping, cleansing. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, who knows the verse about regulation? There's a verse in the 6th chapter. Yes. All dukkha will be finished. All your misery will be finished if you regulate yourself. You can get rid of all your miseries. That means of the body. And the mind too. And the mind. So, eating, sleeping, working, and recreation should be regulated. Now, one should care for the body and one's day-to-day life in a secondary way. Being mindful of higher knowledge, self-realization come first. So devotees, we understand this, and we try to be regulated. Sometimes it doesn't always happen. This means don't eat too austerely, or don't overeat also. And sometimes, in the name of selflessness, we accept impure food. Actually, in the old days, in my time, devotees would go out on book distribution for weeks and not come to the temple, so they would have to eat outside sometimes. And what they would do, they would go to the supermarket and they would offer the whole supermarket to Krishna. And then everything was prasadam. They could just eat anything from the supermarket. Except for the meat, of course, fish and eggs. But that was maybe too simple. But we should not imitate that. But anyway, We have to be regulated. So from the prana, we learn regulation. Simple living and high thinking is, how can we apply this to our lives tomorrow? Is there, you can be introspective, see if there's any area of your life that's too much or too little. Too much or too little. Any other ideas how to apply this simple living and high thinking to your life? If you're a brahmachari, it happens naturally, yes?
Maybe instead of being in the complaining mood if things are not so luxurious, we can think of the statement that austerity is the wealth of the brahmanas.
Okay, meditate on this. Austerity is the wealth of the brahmanas.
And then be happy.
And be happy.
If there is some situation which is not so first-class material.
If you get austerity, then you get more wealth for your spiritual bank account. Good. Yes, Muni. Raj Prabhu.
Had just some discussions with a few friends about this on a shallow platform that once ego doesn't get involved, also life is much easier because before there is ego, you have to think that what they are thinking about me and promote myself and so on.
Okay, if your ego is not there, it becomes a lot easier. Your false ego. If your real ego is there, it becomes easier. Yes, ego gets in the way so many times in the things we do. Okay, so good. Any other application? Because these are such wonderful ideas for application, yes?
Because the body cannot exist without the air.
Good. Oh, good. Right. We can, because we need the air so much, we cannot exist without air. So who we should depend on for air? Good, good. Any other ideas? This is very nice. Okay, now we will go to the wind. From the wind, we will learn detachment from environment and detachment while traveling. Verse 40. Even a transcendentalist is surrounded by innumerable material objects which possess good and bad qualities. However, one who has transcended material good and evil should not become entangled even when in contact with the material objects. Rather, he should act like the wind. So how does the wind act? In the purport, it explains. The wind passes through the most dark and forbidding places, but the wind is not frightened or disturbed. Similarly, a devotee of Lord Krishna should never be fearful or anxious, even when in the most difficult situation. So this is, the wind is just always passing through. It picks up the nice smells, and then it drops them. It picks up, and then it goes over the garbage heap. It picks up the bad smell, and it drops them. So we need to go through life like that, like the wind. Sometimes we're in very happy situations, but we can't try to hold on to it or grasp it. Just let it go. It will go. And sometimes the distress will come. And, of course, we won't want to grasp it. We'll try to get rid of it. But don't worry. It will go. It's also temporary. It comes. Happiness comes, and distress comes. And there's different pleasing forms, tastes, smells, sounds, and touches. And then, of course, then we don't like the opposites of those. Some things we like, some things we don't like. But don't be attached to either one. So in the material world, people are so disturbed because so many things they don't like and so many things they like. And so the mind is always in trouble there with these things. Now, another lesson from the wind. When the wind blows in many directions at once, the atmosphere becomes agitated. Similarly, if the mind is constantly attracted and repelled by material objects, there will be such mental disturbance, it will be impossible to think of the absolute truth. Therefore, one should learn from the blowing wind the art of moving throughout the material world without attachment. So yes, if you simply read the newspaper, you will see all the troubles that people are going through. Just yesterday I saw a headline because I was on the airplane. One nurse for 250,000 patients. If you read the headline, you think, how can it be possible? You know, but the nurses are taking the place of doctors in England because there's not enough doctors. And so they're like covering whole regions on call, like that. So it's, this is very disturbing if you hear this knowledge, this news, this news. And the mind is always going, especially in japa. So therefore we have to learn the art of moving through this world without attachment. So the first lesson from the wind is to be detached from the things around us while moving in this world. There's a second lesson from the wind. I don't know if I put it here. Yes, sense objects. Oh, yeah. Death, yeah, bodies. So the first lesson is sense objects. The second is bodies. Because we're moving from one body to another. We're traveling. So we should not be attached to this particular body. Because it will go for sure. And the verse says, although a self-realized soul may live in various material bodies while in this world, experiencing their various qualities and functions, he is never entangled, just as the wind which carries various aromas does not actually mix with them. So we've had so many births, so many. And we go through, even in this life, we go through so many changes, childhood, adolescence, adulthood, old age. And we experience the pains and pleasures of this body. So we have to understand we're not the body. And even beyond that, we have to understand we're not the mind. Because the mind is also going through so many changes from youth to childhood to youth to old age. So that also, we have to be like the wind and not be attached to the changes of the body. And when you travel, then you realize also what you need to take with you. Actually, what you can live on. It's not that you don't need that much, actually, to live for months. But when you stay in one place, then you accumulate things. So it's like that. If you stay in one place, then you get things. So the yogi is not entangled. Prabhupada flew to so many countries, many opulent facilities, but he didn't stay in one place very long. Nor was he attached. And he was like the wind. He was going from one place 14 times around the world in 10 years. So he was 70. He was in his 70s and 80s when he was traveling around the world. And sometimes on his morning walks, I was on a morning walk with Prabhupada, and I was trying to figure out how does he walk so fast? He's in his 70s, I'm in my 20s. Logically, there's no explanation. I was just so amazed. We were so tired, and he was like floating, you know. Maybe it was a whole different way to walk, I don't know. But which yogis do, but we were certainly touching the ground. Maybe his feet weren't touching the ground, ours were. So we were tired. But here, Shudhakirti tells a story that one flight from New York, many devotees were in the same row as Srila Prabhupada. And Shudhakirti was next to him. And as the flight progressed, some of the disciples began to fall asleep like this and do dive bombs. And it was quite a sight seeing a row of shaven heads bobbing up and down. You go down and then catch yourself and go up and go down and catch yourself. And Prabhupada was not amused. Just see, he said. Everyone is wide awake except for the devotees. They're in Maya, sleeping. Everyone else is awake. Why they cannot stay awake? Usually when Prabhupada addressed me in this way, I became silent. I was afraid of saying the wrong thing and possibly disturb him. So Prabhupada, when he said in a purport that when Narada Muni was cursed by Daksha not to stay in one place more than 3 days at a time. He says, I also have been cursed, Prabhupada said, by the parents of my devotees, not to stay in one place more than three days. And one time, he went to Bhubaneswar, India, Orissa, to lay the cornerstone of the foundation of the temple, new temple. And at that time, Gaur Govinda Maharaj was living in a hut. And this place was in the middle of nowhere. My husband and I stayed in that hut. There were two rooms. He was in one and we were in the other. For one night, we stayed overnight. And that place, there was no water, no electricity. It was like, you know, mud. It was really austere. And so when Prabhupada came there, they got a very nice accommodation in a government guest house for him. And Prabhupada said, no, I want to stay in the hut, which Gaur Govinda Maharaj has made for me. He preferred the hut. He would say, these hotels, they are brothels. I will not stay. He would rather stay in austere condition. So the lesson of the wind, how can we apply this to our life in Krishna consciousness tomorrow? Any ideas? That's difficult. Yes?
It just came to my mind that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere, always rests in ethereal space in the same manner.
Oh.
Rests in me.
Oh, okay. You can, when you see the wind, you can remember that analogy in Bhagavad Gita. The wind is blowing everywhere, so all in space, so all living beings are in me, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Good. Any other ideas about the wind? Yes.
Of
purifiers, I am the wind. Good. Yes, I felt that on my trip yesterday from Belfast. I was had to change planes in London Heathrow, and we had to walk out on the outside to get the plane, and it was such a strong wind. And I had this, you know, just to get from the bus to the stairs, I had this little new suitcase on four wheels, and it was just blowing, you know, down the runway, my suitcase and me. And I had to just really, it's like, I don't know how fast it was, 20 kilometers an hour? Yes.
And there was actually in Canada, there was, no, it happened, a natural accident, that there was a 9 meter thick ice wall from the lake. It went to a village and it devastated the village practically.
A village?
Yeah.
A 9 kilometer?
No,
a 9 meter
thick,
high ice.
Ice wall from the lake.
Oh.
It was blown by the wind
to the village.
Yeah. And it practically devastated the village.
Devastated the village. Just see
so
what one piece
powerful.
Of ice can do. Yeah. With the wind, help of the wind. Yeah, so, yeah, I think I saw that on Facebook yesterday, that the ice water was coming up to somebody's house, creeping up in Minnesota, America, too.
Yeah.
It was that. I was wondering, how can ice water come up to the house, you know?
Yeah.
I was looking at the picture and thinking, how is that? Yes?
Well, I was thinking about this, like I was mentioning, when you're traveling,
Yeah. You
realize you don't need so much.
Right.
You stay in one place. You have all your things, and you kind of sometimes you get stuck on certain things.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and I was thinking that also like adds to, you know, your whole false identity. You know, oh, this is my thing, and you know, I use this for this and this, and you know, like, sometimes I look into my cupboard and I never take anything except my daughters and my gunshots, but you know, I have all this stuff there, and I kind of just look at them, you know, wonder what to do with it. So,
right. So we have, this will be tomorrow's lesson of the sun, actually. It will be, you will see when we hear the lesson of the sun tomorrow, the sun like the sunshine. That will be the lesson, and we'll discuss that more elaborately tomorrow, but that's a good that you can apply to the wind. Okay, our last guru for today, we better keep going, is the sky. What are the qualities of the sky? When you think of the sky, what do you think of? Yes?
Something unlimited.
Unlimited, good. Unlimited. Yes?
All pervasive.
Everywhere. Okay.
It's harboring everything.
It's
harboring everything.
Harboring, yes. It's holding everything. Yes. It gives accommodation according to Third Canto, Chapter 26. Accommodation for the room for external and internal existences of all living entities. It's giving room not only for our gross body, for our subtle body as well. So two lessons we will learn from the sky. First, the soul, all-pervading aspect, the soul and super soul are present within all things. As the spirit soul enters in all forms of life, both moving and non-moving, so we see that the individual souls are everywhere. There's Sarvagata, Bhagavad Gita says, the souls are everywhere. And the super soul is also there. Now the second lesson of the sky is how the sky is the background for everything. To be an observer. The mighty wind blows clouds, storms in the sky is not implicated, not affected. Sometimes we have hurricanes, wind, rain. It was hail actually in Belfast. We were on Harinam, the day we chose to go, it was hailing. Off and on. First there would be sun, then there would be hail. Then there would be sun, hail, or rain. You know. It was an amazing day, last Saturday. We were on Harinam. And, well, so the sky, these things are happening, lightning, thunder. But the sky is not affected. So in our life, sometimes there's lightning, sometimes there's thunder, sometimes there's hurricanes in our lives. But we have to practice to be the observer of it, to step back. So many changes, birth, death, happiness, distress, love, hate. And the soul is simply the background for Sanchit. He's subtle, he's not affected by these things. So, how can we apply this? Oh, let's see about Prabhupada. How did Prabhupada exemplify this quality? Near the end of his life, he was presented with some books. And he said, this is life. The material world is just bones. The bones are not our real life. Our real concern is the living force. The bones may remain or go. It doesn't matter. The real life is sustaining the bones. So he's saying it was just bones. And when Atreya Rishi came from Tehran, he says, I want to take you to Iran. Prabhupada said, now you have to take a bundle of bones. That's how it was, too. So how can we apply the lesson of the sky to our lives tomorrow? Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking like the quality of sannyasi is to be indifferent.
Sannyas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj was staying in the Brahmacharya ashram for 2 weeks for a reason.
2 weeks?
Yeah. And so he had one room and Manurka and myself, we had a kitchen.
Oh, you lost the was now.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he was displaying this quality. I mean, to be an observer, you know.
To be an observer.
Yeah, because he just like, you know, we didn't like manage very nicely everything. And he was like, okay, you know, whatever. And, you know, and he was just, you know, kind of.
So you saw that quality in Maharaj when he stayed in the Brahmacharya ashram.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made the comment that this is even more opulent than the sannyas room that they had last year. This is beautiful with all the tulsi. It's an amazing place. Amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, okay. Any other ideas? Yes?
It's a little bit similar to what he said, but I was thinking of this fifth chapter verse, Naprahrishet Priyam Prabhya, Nonvijet Prabhya Chapriya. One should not be elated when something something pleasant happens, or one should not despise the unpleasing circumstances.
Right. Good. Bhagavad Gita. Yes, it's very. These verses make you think of Bhagavad Gita so much. They really help you too. I just want to read one thing, one little, very short poem that one devotee wrote who was a participant in one of these seminars on space. It's a wonderful. Wonderful little realization. When I told her to apply it to her life, this is what she did. She wrote this poem. How far is it from the earth to the sky? Is it simply a question of miles? Can I go with an airplane or by spreading my wings? Can I go simply changing my style? Does the sky have a limit, either upwards or down? Are there borders how far it can reach? Or is it equally present even under the sea, in my lungs, among people on the beach? How can I be connected to the limitless sky, be a part of the play on its stage, How long must I wait to find the key to the door of my self-made cage? If you want me to reach you, Krishna, then please stretch out your hands. I'm lost, long lost on all levels of existence. By your personal touch, kindly make me understand that you are present on all sides of this space. Isn't that a nice realization of sky, space? She saw sky as space, like holding things. Any other ideas how to apply the idea of sky? Yes.
Right. So how to relate to everything, every living entity, and kind of I try to see myself as a servant.
Who is your guru, Maharaj?
His Holiness Gaudiya.
Oh, very good. Okay. Nice. Very nice. See yourself as servant of the servant. That's a good application of soul and super soul. That lesson of the sky. Okay. Any other ideas? Because tomorrow you will all get the chance to try to apply earth or mountain lesson or tree or air, prana or wind or sky to your life. And come back tomorrow, we will hear what happened in your practice. Yes?
I was thinking, the sky and space, I was thinking we could try to be more focused and not spaced out.
Oh, good. Don't be like the space when you chant and when you do service. Don't be like the space. Yes?
Also, Narada Muni is a transcendental spaceman who travels everywhere.
Yes.
So the devotees, they can spread the influence because of being connected to Krishna.
Good. As Narada Muni travels everywhere, devotees can spread their influence because of being connected to Krishna. Yes.
Yeah, I remember when I was still a non-devotee, I was always thinking it's cosmos, like a very dark and cold, ice cold place.
Right.
And I was thinking that we are all like floating in cold and dark cosmos.
Right.
But after I got this knowledge, the sky has been a little bit more friendly.
Yes. Prabhupada also made a comment on the friendly skies. Like, there was a slogan by one airline many years ago, fly in the friendly skies, with United, I think it was, when Prabhupada was here, fly the friendly skies of United. And he said, we should fly the friendly skies of Krishna consciousness back to God. Friendly skies. Okay, any questions or comments? We have a few minutes left for that. Yes?
Did I understand right that this Uddhava Gita is within Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes.
This verse is
yes. You can see. You see the chart here. It tells which verses they are connected to. It's chapter 7, 8, and 9 of 11th canto. It's the first three chapters of Uddhava Gita, spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. And this first three chapters are spoken by an Avaduta Brahmana to Yadu many millions of years ago, and Krishna is quoting him. He is quoting this Avaduta Brahmana in his teachings. And this is the solace for, because Krishna is going to leave the world, and Uddhava is feeling separation, and he says, take me with you, he said. Then he spoke this Uddhava Gita, so that he will have something to remember when Krishna leaves.
Is this the same Uddhava who went to the gopis to Uddhava?
Yes, same Uddhava. Very close servant of Krishna. That's why he spoke this Gita to him. And it's more advanced than the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, Bhagavad Gita is like a seed, and this is an expansion, elaboration of it. Many verses are similar, and some chapters are very similar, but they're bigger, more expansive. Bigger chapters, yes.
Mataji, before we came here, did you explain what is the story behind this Avaduta Brahmana?
No, that will come later. Yeah, the story was just not behind him, but behind Krishna speaking to Uddhava, which I just told now in brief. that Uddhava, Krishna was ready to leave the world. And Uddhava said, please take me with you. So then, as a response to that, he spoke the Uddhava Gita. And this Avadhuta Brahmana was living at the time of Yadu, King Yadu, millions of years before. And he told this to King Yadu, the same teachings. And a little bit later in our classes, we'll find out exactly who this Avadhuta Brahmana is. He's somebody that we know about, that is famous. Not only famous, but one of the incarnations of Krishna. He's an incarnation. You can try to guess which one. Which incarnation. Actually, it's there in the first canto. That's cheating, if you look at it. I guess it's not cheating, but if you read Bhagavatam.
May I guess?
Yeah, sure, you can guess, yeah.
Rishabhadev?
No. No, it's not Rishabhadev. His teachings are right there. Now, this is... No, it's somebody who is not yet mentioned in Bhagavatam. I mean, not... In a big sense. He's mentioned briefly in the lists. Two, three times there's lists of incarnations, so he's in that list. Mm-hmm. Similar to Rishabhdev's teachings, though, very similar. But in this Avadhuta Brahmana, you don't find much about devotional service. It's more detachment. Detachment, because he's an Avadhuta. And so... He's teaching more about, you can see so much detachment in this, teaching the wind, the sky, a lot of detachment here. Which is like the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, you are not this body. It's like that. So, yes?
I was just thinking, like, you said Krishna gave these teachings to Uddhava to help him relieve from this feeling of separation.
Right.
But... In one sense, they are not this kind of rasika teachings.
I know, but yeah, well, that will come later in.
But I was just thinking that maybe that is not, in one sense, like the highest what Krishna is giving. That I mean, this rasika stuff.
It will come though.
But that if we understand this knowledge, we can feel connected with Krishna.
Well, this is the first qualification to get to the rasika. First, you have to understand you're not the body. In order to get to the rasika level. And very soon, chapter 12 will be like bhakti. It will be bhakti. Not only bhakti, but it will be the gopis. That's chapter 12 of Uddhava Gita. It will come very soon. First, you have to learn you're not the body. Yes. Can we find
some
qualities
that in the
element sky? Krishna's qualities. Yeah, Krishna is also renounced. Renunciation, that's one of his six opulences. So how renounced is Krishna that he left the gopis in the middle of the rasa dance? even though they were crying. And he left Vrindavan, went to Mathura. He renounced all the residents. Of course, he didn't really, if you study carefully the Acharya's commentaries, but it seemed that he renounced all the Brijbasis and went to Mathura. So yes, renunciation is one of the qualities of Krishna. Renunciation. It's teaching renunciation. But all of us need to have this quality just to get through life. We have to have tolerance. You have to be a bit renounced to be the observer. We all need to have this quality, because even especially this applies to all ashram brahmacharis, of course, and then even grihastas. They have to have a lot of tolerance, probably maybe even more than brahmacharis, especially when you get your child. You see, 24/7. You don't sleep. You don't eat. Your life is completely... I saw in the life of my son with the granddaughter. She's completely in control of their lives. Not even 2 years old yet, but the whole life revolves around the child. Unless she's sleeping, they can't do anything. So it's... Yeah. A lot of tolerance. This applies to everyone. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. We will see you tomorrow at this time. Try to apply these lessons.